Blog Talk Radio.
We've got the band back together, all three of us, the three amigos, tonight, live on End Zone on Blog Talk Radio. And that's right, we are hoping for a little more action and a lot more of us talking, actually, so I guess Elvis had a little bit wrong. I am Jeremy the Impact York, your host, of course, tonight, along with the King ATL and Reggie Walker, and, of course, the coach, Haywood Hill. How we doing, guys?
Doing good, Jeremy, doing great.
And, of course, like I said, we are trying out the new theme. What did you guys think of the new theme?
Oh, I actually like it. I mean, change is good, man, you know. We keep playing around with it, but I definitely like that.
Yeah, that was different.
Yeah, so I've been trying to change it up because, like I said, this show has never really had that identifiable theme, and it's kind of hard to go wrong with Elvis. Everybody across the world I've ever met never had a problem with him, so I figured we'd try it out. And, of course, whatever the fans tell us, if you guys like it, let us know. If you think we should be playing something else, send it in. But I know you guys have other engagements coming up soon, so we're going to try to rifle through these just as fast as we can. We've got a ton of one-liners pretty much tonight because, as you said earlier, Coach, right now there's a little bit of nothing going on.
Yeah, during this time of the year right now, you know, people just – when I say people, I'm speaking of the coaches and the organizations at large basically have gone through OTAs. They are now looking at – rookie mini camps and what they've had a chance to do there. They're looking at where players are in there. Now, at this point, it's not necessarily a dead period, but it's a positioning period where they're looking at players and seeing how they're going to fit into training camp, closing out free agent contracts and getting ready for training camp within the next month.
Yeah, nothing personal because we're all media, we're all family as far as that is concerned, but if the biggest deal you're trying to make is about a glorified walkthrough in shorts, then maybe you should check us out, weekend pickup games.
Yeah, but it does give the fans an opportunity. I know quite a few fans that traveled up to Flowery Branch just to kind of get an idea, especially with a new coach, you know, to see what the atmosphere was like. And they were pretty excited about it. Got some good feedback from a lot of those guys. So it's still good for the fans. This is always a bad time in sports if you're not a baseball fan. Basketball is over, still got a couple of months before football, so, you know, we just kind of got to ride the wave.
Yeah, and unfortunately, I hated it for both you guys that now that the Stanley Cup playoffs are over with, you guys were just almost in tears the other day about that, but I promise you, they'll start back soon enough. Now, of course, you guys are probably LA Kings fans, so they'll probably win one the next couple years, but...
I was going to say, actually, my team is gone. I was a Thrashers guy, so I don't have a dog in the fight anymore.
Yeah, unfortunately, they were my team, too, but it allowed me to go back to the team that got me into it, the Rangers. So, at least they make the playoffs a lot. But as you guys said, there have been a lot of fans go check out these mini camps. In fact, NFL Network's running a mini camp special right now because I guess they ran out of Super Bowls to replay. But... including one Mark Cooper of the ATL Falcoholics, who is going to call in at the top of the next hour with a tailgate report and a minicamp report because he went the other day. And, just kind of gauge what the reaction was up there because there's a lot of new faces, including new coaches up in Flowery Branch.
Yeah, some of the early feedback I got from some other areas was definitely noting the pickup in the speed and the activity. And just the overall attitude it seems to be that of Wolves. So I was glad to hear a lot of that stuff.
Maybe we should change the name. I mean, I like Falcons, but, you know, Atlanta Wolves kind of sounds really cool, too.
Yeah, Atlanta seems to have that bird theme, at least for those two teams we've got. Fuck with changing that. Although you, I did hear you were trying to buy the Falcons at one point, so maybe if you purchased.
You know, I tried, but I instead decided to go to Taco Bell and get a late-night snack. So that unfortunately didn't work out for the Falcons or myself. But the little burrito, whatever they call it, was pretty good. It's one of those late night. I'm either going to buy an NFL franchise, you know, the hometown team, or I'm going to eat. And I guess my stomach took over.
Hey, man, that's usually the case with me. So we fighting the same fight, brother.
According to my financial advisor, she advised me that was probably the better thing to do anyway, although she didn't like that I went to Taco Bell late night either. So
you lost two ways. Not very smart, Jeremy. You're batting zero right now.
Hey, that's okay. One out of three is considered successful in most sports. But, we all have the same topic lists and sheets. Is there anything that really jumps out to you guys want to get into?
Let me go back through. There were a couple of things I don't know if you had on there.
Okay.
The whole Dez Bryant situation is starting to get a little crazy. Wondering how that was paying itself out.
Yeah, we can start there.
Okay. Yeah, that was I mean, not that anybody didn't see it coming.
One of the worst kept secrets in Dallas.
Right, no one and I think I saw where you said Michael Sam was suspended. I definitely that caught my eye. So let's start there, Jeremy.
What with Michael Sam?
Yeah. I wanted to. I don't know what that's about. So enlighten us.
All right. Well, Michael Sam, everybody's favorite current non NFL player, or at least according to the media, he's pretty popular. Obviously played for the Montreal Alouettes and. He was recently suspended because he walked away from the practice field, I believe, during a practice. And the reason he did that was he was pouting and wasn't happy with his playing time. So I think he has since left the team, so he's currently a free agent. A lot of people think this is because of all the training camps going on and it's about to be summer. He feels like he's going to get picked up, so he went ahead and left that job.
Wow, not very smart, though. I mean, walking away, that's not going to get any – I mean, coaching, I'll let you – speak to that from a coaching perspective, but that can't fare well for him for teams that may have been looking at him, could it?
Absolutely not. As a matter of fact, it's showing that pre-Madonna thing that you might have heard of from time to time being placed on a player. If you notice, a lot of players in their infancy, when I say their infancy, a couple of years in the league, not many years in the league, when they're removed from the league, whether it's their choice or not, and they go to the CFL, they're looking for some of that same treatment. But, however, what they fail to realize is a lot of those coaches have friends. We all have buddies, and we all converse and we talk. And this was probably one of those measurables that the NFL was looking at before they looked at bringing Michael Sam's back based on the way things happened with him coming into the NFL. So, again, I cannot prove that or disprove that. But, again, if he's walking off the practice field in the CFL – not making NFL money, what makes one thing it won't happen in the NFL? And so those are the things that you have to look at. You know, you don't cut off your nose to spite your face. It's still professional sports. You're still a professional, and you must always conduct yourself as such.
Yeah, I don't know about you guys, but even if I thought I may have a different opportunity or a better opportunity, I wouldn't quit my job I have now to go walk over there and do that.
Right. Again, cutting your nose off to spite your face. Well put.
Right.
I mean, and again, this speaks to those unspokens that Coach Hill has often cautioned us about when we as fans make those emotionally driven comments about, you know, moves that our teams may be making. It's like, hey, there's another side of the coin that you aren't privy to, and this may be one of those things.
Right. Remember that guys, you know, in scouting, they do a very extensive background on the players. And although some things might seem minute, you know, and I'm not saying this was the case with Mr. Sam's, but this might have came up in part of the report that he showed, it displayed these type of behaviors in sports as early as the sixth grade. So these are things that they track and they monitor. And so sometimes him being out of the NFL right now currently doesn't not make him still a viable entity or an asset possibly to the NFL, but this most definitely didn't help his journey back to the NFL. Walking off anybody's practice field basically says, I'm done, I quit. And, you know, that's in any sport from T-ball to the NFL.
Yeah, absolutely.
Wow.
And you know, a lot of people think, or not a lot of people, but some people are in the camp, and possibly even his people, don't want to put words in anybody's mouth, but they think it was because of, you know, his big groundbreaking announcement he made right before the draft. But I would simply point to other people in sports that have made the same announcement, and, you know, somebody like Darren Young, who's in the WWE, come out with his orientation, and instead of trying to use it possibly as a bargaining chip, I don't know if Michael Sam's doing this, but instead of using it as a bargaining chip, what Darren Young did was use it to be a advocate and a speaker. He goes to a lot of schools. He goes to and does all these other speaking engagements. And through that, the WWE has actually elevated his role to being almost one of their faces now.
And that makes sense. That was a well-played move. I mean, again, you're not using it to go get an Oprah show or maybe elevate your draft status, which is what a lot of fans thought. Most people could have cared less about his orientation. It was the fact that, you know, you then came out and said, hey, I'm getting ready to do this show, and this reality TV show and all this other stuff. I think that was a well-played move on the opposite end. You know, it is what it is. You are who you are. You just wanted people to know, as opposed to trying to get, you know, some financial benefit or financial gain from it.
Right, absolutely. And, of course, we wish Michael Sam the best, and maybe it's because his agent got in his ear and said, hey, these three teams would like to talk to you, but they can't because you're playing up here. Maybe it was something we don't know, but, you know, we'll just have to wait and see, as always.
Right.
Yeah.
But you did mention Dez Bryant and Dez Bryant and the Cowboys and this possible new deal. And so far, they're not even talking numbers. The whole thing with this new deal is he's kind of threatening to hold out and just, I mean, all the way up to week one. He said if that means he doesn't play week one, he doesn't play week one. On the flip side, here in Atlanta, Julio Jones said he's not worried about it. It'll work itself out. He's not going to miss even a practice.
Right. And, again, Julio knows the reality. Even those things that aren't spoken of, you know, he knows that he's going to get his day. And I think everybody else in the league knows Atlanta's not going to be stupid enough to not get this guy re-signed with Atlanta. It's just the way that it is. And that's why you pay your agent. You pay your agent to handle those types of situations. And I thought that was a great statement that Julio put out there. He definitely earned a lot of fan support by putting that out there, and I was glad to hear him say that.
One of the things I wanted to add to was that that was exactly the best way for Mr. Jones to handle his situation. I tell players all the time, you know, owners own, coaches coach, and players play. And so your job is to be a player and to perform and most definitely put yourself in a position to show that you're capable, willing, and ready to perform. So even if, let's just say, for whatever the reason may be, it doesn't work out with Atlanta, he's going out on the practice field. He's not pouting. He's not talking about I'm holding out. He's not doing any of those things. He's saying my job is to be a professional receiver in the National Football League, wherever that check may come from. I need to be prepared when my number's called, whether it's with Atlanta or someone else, and be prepared to continue to do what I do, and that's earn checks as a professional. As a professional receiver.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's nothing personal to Dez. I do agree that he does deserve to get paid. What will more than likely happen is he'll get franchised maybe once, twice, three times. I think Russell Wilson's looking at a similar thing. I think he can only do it twice, but that'll probably happen. Then they'll negotiate, or then they'll let him walk away. But, I mean, he kind of is the Michael Irvin of this super team they're building, so you got to pay this guy.
Yeah, I don't disagree, Jeremy. Again, you know, maybe using the term pout was a little strong because I'm not attributing it to any particular player when I make that statement. I'm saying just in general. A lot of times players feel that holding out is going to be the answer to – it's going to be a catch-all, be-all for everything. But if you're not actually practicing, you're losing reps and you're losing timing. So when the deal is done or completed and or final and you don't have that timing, now you can imagine that you're being thrusted onto the field because you're one of those high-dollar salary employees, and now your timing is off, your route running is bad, just a lot of things don't go so well because, again, football is a physical sport, and it requires you to have contact, just like boxing and other sports. So it's not something you can just finesse your way in and out. You have to spend time with the quarterback getting those routes and the timing down. You know, you might know all of the routes and ran them 1,000 times, but each time the timing has to get better and better and better, and the more that you're away from that timing, the more you'll start to see that the timing is off, and now that's when you get all the press hits and, you know, can he do it, or has he gotten lazy because he's gotten a big contract, and that's when all the other negative things start to come in and get attached or tagged to the player. So you got to keep practicing. You got to keep working. Let your agent do what you're paying your agent to do, and that's handling the contract negotiations, and you continue to just do what you do as a player so that it's no question about when the time for you to sign on the dotted line, you're ready to go.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, once again, we'll just have to see how this all plays out. I think before it's over with, probably, you know, by late July at the absolute latest, Jerry Jones is going to sit down and hammer out that deal. And I think Julio's deal is going to happen right around preseason two. But moving on, I didn't know if you guys had seen, I don't know who has the naming rights to the new Minnesota Stadium. It's really nice looking. It's got some pretty good flybys you can see on the internet. It's not quite as nice as Atlanta, but I could be a little biased since I've passed it a handful of times already. But even though Impact Media gave a valiant effort to try to get our name on the side of this stadium, do you guys have any idea what the winning bid was?
No, I saw that one too, and I was wondering who could have came in with the most amount. I tried to think of companies up there in Milwaukee. Oh, I'm sorry, in the Minnesota area, and none stood out to me as being maybe the front runner.
No, I have not a clue either, Jeremy.
It was $220 million, I believe, was the winning bid. So you never know. The Minnesota Vikings may play at Adrian Peterson Stadium for all we know.
That seems like they're happy just to have Adrian Peterson playing.
and I just saw again, as it's on here at the studio, the minicamp report. Adrian Peterson not only showed up early, not only stayed late, but he has not missed a practice or minicamp this entire offseason.
Right. And again, I think we talked about this last week, and that, you know, I think that had a lot to do with the Mike Zimmer.
Yes.
Relationship that he has.
But, yeah, $220 million. And I hope maybe by the end of the show we can figure out who got that. But that's what the article I read said that the winning bid was. That's a good chunk of money. I'd be interested to know who gets the Falcons stadium rights.
Yeah, last I heard it was down to Delta and Coca-Cola were the two.
I could see advantages out of either one of these, but I would favor Coke out of that.
Yeah, I think Delta might be the one that comes in at the end, though. I was surprised to not see Home Depot a part of that.
Well, but that may be it may not be able to because of Arthur's ties to both. It would almost seem like if Home Depot did get it, then everybody would say, oh, it's just because Arthur's a part of both.
Absolutely, and that's what I thought about as well.
Although there was a lot of fun. Go ahead.
No, I'm sorry. I have a quick question for you guys.
Yeah.
Going back to the Minnesota naming rights, and as we're talking about naming rights, is $220 a bargain for the naming rights, or is that somewhere around where the going rate is for the naming rights of?
That sounds like it might be a bargain for me. That's what I was thinking, too.
Yeah. I'm thinking as well. It sounds like it might be a bargain.
It did sound a little low to me. I felt like maybe it was baseball stadiums or another number I've heard recently of a new stadium. It seemed like it was upwards in the 400 up to 500 million range. But then again, with it being Minnesota, I mean, you may not have that many suitors. It's not like Atlanta or something like that. And it's not the first one in Minnesota, but we all know Atlanta is a slightly busier city than Minneapolis.
Right, right. Well, I want to take a stab in the dark and say that they're going to probably – What's the name of the mall up there, the largest mall in the United States that's in Minnesota?
The Mall of America.
Yeah, Mall of America.
So I can see it as America Stadium. There's a possibility.
Yeah, I'm sitting here really trying to think about the companies. It's usually it's one of those companies up there that has a has some big interest, or maybe was founded in Minnesota or Minneapolis, but I couldn't think of anything right offhand.
And, of course, our lovely producers here don't have a clue either. I guess they could be Googling it right now. But it's all right. We'll move on to the next topic. Like I said, as soon as we find out, we'll tell everybody. But did you guys happen to hear about the Patriots ring party at Robert Kraft's home?
I did not. I heard some rumblings about it, but I didn't get into the specifics.
Well, I have the note about Darrell Revis, which we'll get to in a minute, but I just have to – there's a couple little notes we'll get to before then. Apparently, a little dance party kind of broke out in the middle of it, and from the video that somebody inside took and put on the internet, no idea because it's all their in-house guys, but – according to the video, Tom Brady better be glad he's got, you know, pretty good looks and a great throwing arm because he can't dance to save his life.
It reminds me then, that's kind of maybe two and a half counting the infamous Inflategate, which we won't bring up, Jeremy, to save your eardrums. But the other issue that I think a lot of fans, I know some Patriots fans had about Mr. Brady, was the video that was released that showed him jumping off like a 100-foot cliff into some water. That's kind of two strikes. He might need to go sit down somewhere.
And the other quick note on that, well, you know, that even my wife happened to see that video and said that even I've got a few steps on Tom Brady, which made me feel real good that I was good in at least one area that he was not, or at least a little better. But the other thing of note before I get to the Revis story was that everybody was kind of in kind of the suit and tie kind of business casual to the most part. But, you know, everybody was dressed pretty nice as though it was an awards banquet, except for one, Rob Gronkowski, who in typical Gronk fashion, fresh off his appearance on Celebrity Family Feud, which if you haven't seen it, Google it or find, you know, YouTube or something. The Gronkowskis are definitely a unique family. But he showed up, I believe, in a Hawaiian shirt and khaki shorts and proceeded to somehow not find his shirt for a long time.
That sounds like Gronk. That fits his motif.
Exactly. I don't know when Rob Gronkowski stopped being Rob Gronkowski, but he's pretty much been Gronk for like the last 10 years.
Yeah. I don't know, man. I mean, but he's popular now. But his popularity has reemerged, I should say. So maybe he's just doing some press.
Yeah, maybe it's all about his brand. It's all about the branding. It's all about brand.
If I was his agent, I would have his name on so many different like frat boy like items and stuff like that, because I think that's his market, and not just the big, you know, sports fans and New England fans, but I think they could really hit that college market and clean up.
Yes, they could, absolutely.
But the Revis story I want to get to, and I've left out one key word in that whole thing, Revis's mom. Apparently Darrell Revis, who decided to leave the Patriots after getting his ring, and of course he went back to the New York Jets, one of their biggest rivals. No problems there. He got the invitation to come to this ring party, which was, I thought that was above and beyond, because Robert Kraft could have just mailed it to him for all it mattered. But Revis couldn't make it, so he sent his mom, who flew all the way up to New England from, I think they live somewhere here in the South. I'm not for certain, but I know she had to fly at least a couple hours up to the New England area. She comes to the door. She says, "I'm here to pick up Darrell Revis's ring," shows an ID, says, "Hey, I'm his mom." Security did not let her in, and she had to come all the way back without the ring.
Oh, wow.
Now, I don't know if Robert Kraft knew about this initially or not, but she pretty much got sent home empty-handed from the report I saw.
Oh, man. That's interesting. And names don't even stop the great TSA.
No.
Well, that's quite interesting. That's quite interesting because, again, if it was a private party, it was his security that was there. But, I mean, his mom is a well-known figure with inside the NFL community because she's always been places where he's been. So it's not like she's not a recognizable individual, A, and then B, the name itself. I mean, who goes and creates the name Revis, to try to get the ring because the ring is already protected, and if someone was to steal it or whatever, they can always remold them because they know this. So I think that maybe Mr. Kraft will, have a conversation with Mr. Revis about it and probably be very apologetic at the fact that his mom came up. Because I'm sure some kind of information went from his agent to the organization as to why he was not going to be in attendance with that.
Right. I can't remember the exact reason he said, but, yeah, he couldn't physically be there for some other engagement or something. Might have even been practicing with his new team. I can't remember what it was. But, yeah, the easy thing for Robert Kraft, though, and I'm not giving him excuses, but the easy thing to say is that he apologizes for the security he had at the door. That he can pretty much throw them under the bus.
Wow, much like Deflategate, huh?
yeah.
Blame it on the equipment guy.
That's the easiest thing to do, but that was kind of the interesting story out of the whole ring ceremony, except for Gronk and Brady there. But
we could just blame it on Jeremy. That's a good move, huh, Coach?
You could.
Yeah, they can always take that route too.
Probably be closer to the truth.
it could be because for all we know, I have his ring in front of me or something right now.
Right.
The magic of radio. You have no idea what we're looking at right now. But let's see. Moving on real quick. Did want to get into one of our local boys getting paid, and by local, I mean he went to school here. Todd Gurley signed with the Rams. He signed his rookie deal. Did you guys see the terms of this one?
No, I did not. I was interested to see what they would give him. I'm sure it was a five-year deal, though, right?
It was a four.
Okay, wow, okay.
In fact, most of the first-round guys ended up with four-year deals. I found that a little odd.
Yeah, I found that odd with Vic Beasley. But maybe those guys are getting a little bit more smart and not locking themselves in like your other guy up here in Seattle, Mr. Wilson, who's unfortunately reaping the quote unquote benefits of doing that.
Right. But let's see, the Rams signed Todd Gurley to a 4-year $13.82 million deal with a 8.31 signing bonus. And the thing, I don't know if this is just a first round or if this is recent because I didn't recall it last year, but the 13.82 is absolutely guaranteed.
Oh, wow. Okay.
100% guaranteed. Actually, when we get into Vic Beasley, his contract is guaranteed as well.
Well, I mean, congratulations, Mr. Gurley. That's a nice move up from a rookie or college student to NFL pro, right?
Yeah, exactly, right?
Man, I chose the wrong sport.
I think we all
did. Let me ask you this, Jeremy. The terms of the contract is 13.2 over the 4 years?
13.82, yeah, for the 4 years, and it's completely guaranteed. It makes it to where it's trying to do math real quick. I believe he makes like 3.6, 3.8 a year, something like that.
Yeah, just cut that in half with taxes.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Yeah, I think that's the part of it that when you're talking about dealing with contracts and looking at that, you have to say everything that looks good on paper, in reality, we're talking about what's liquid on the check itself. So basically, they still got a steal for him coming in, the type of back that he is and the impact back that he's going to have to, the role he's going to have to play immediately going into the Rams to get him for $1.6 million ain't bad.
Yeah, I think that's a steal as well, and I think Beasley's was too, but I think it's all because the new NFL, they don't give those Sam Bradford, Matt Stafford-like contracts anymore, those Ndamukong Suh that are going to strap you for so many years. Since they redid it, I think you can cheaply get good players now.
I mean, it's smart. It's definitely the owners protecting themselves, and obviously the players on their side are demanding more upfront money. I mean, I've always been one of those guys that felt like it was a travesty that the most violent sport in professional, excuse me, sports beyond boxing doesn't have guaranteed contracts.
Yeah, it's coming though. It's going to be like baseball. Eventually, we're going to get to the 80% and 100% guarantees, and I think that's what Russell Wilson will be looking for. But I want to quickly hit a couple stories about the 49ers, then I want to jump into some Falcon stuff because I know you guys got to get out of here in a second. The stories I had on the 49ers, in the process of losing the four players they have to retirement, they're going to save $25 million towards the cap this year, $40 million next year. So even though they're losing quality players and three of the four are exceptional veteran starters, they could actually they have the freedom to, you know, redo some other contracts and maybe bring some people in.
Yeah, but who's out there? I mean, beyond training camp, you just kind of got to wait and see, right? And Coach, that brings about a question. They had a lot of guys retire. What exactly, and a few of them I know for note, are guys that still got a lot left in the tank. Talk to me about how long they have to actually wait after they declare retirement before they can actually come back and play.
Yeah, actually, they can come back right after the season starts if they choose to. I mean, it's not something where they have to wait an extended amount of time out. Sometimes a lot of guys will wait a year and give themselves that type of room. But a lot of times, you know, you've seen in the past where veteran guys do it, and they bypass training camp and they come back somewhere around the second or third game of the season.
Right.
You know, they'll come out of retirement. So whatever the reason might be that these young men retired at the time of their career, they have their valid reasons. And the one thing I can say that they did, which was wise, is they left the game healthy. They left the game, you know, pretty much on top of their game. So it's going to be a situation where if they enter into free agency, they have to go back to the team that retired them first, so they still will have options on them. But they're putting themselves in a position in the free agent market that they'll be able to demand some type of money, and they don't have to play whole seasons to beat their bodies up. It's just like with Tony Gonzalez, remember? He was torn back and forth whether or not he was going to retire, not retire. Can we bring it back by the time the playoffs hit? Those type of things. So they're positioning themselves to where they can get max amount of money with minimum amount of service. And they've earned that.
Okay. Makes sense.
But let's jump into some Falcons so we can get to a few things before you guys got to get out of here. I'm not going to let that play too much. It can play in the background so we get to more stuff. What do you guys want to get to first? Is there anything that jumps out?
Let's talk. Let's talk. There, this is definitely a favorite of mine. Is Sam Baker being released? That, I think
how did
that
I
was,
know you were going there?
Yeah, that's the greatest news ever.
I mean, you know, we wish Sam the best in his future endeavors, but he was often injured, and even when he was in, wasn't the most solid offensive tackle for sure. So, you know, in a way, we all saw this coming a long time ago.
Right, right. I knew that there was some talk that he would have been done a little bit sooner, but because of the cap ramifications prior to June 1st, they were going to wait. I mean, to be a first-rounder and for the world's greatest GM to go and sign him to that massive contract despite the injury history was kind of depressing as a fan. And again, yeah, we wish him the best, but man, I mean, we didn't get what we were supposed to get out of him, so it was tough. The one other thing, Jeremy, I saw what you didn't have, and maybe you know it just kind of recently hit the press not too long ago, is Lamar Holmes is out indefinitely with a broken foot.
Ooh.
So I mean, here we go again with the offensive line injuries, and to Mr. Holmes, who had just really made a comeback and was coming to a scheme that I thought that, you know, he may have been suited for. I mean, it looks like he's going to be out a majority of the season now again.
Yeah, I had not heard that. I do know that Jake was back at practice earlier today, and so was Roddy. So as far as them coming back from some of their things, that was good news. But did this happen? Do you know if it happened before or after the release of Sam Baker?
This actually happened just after, or maybe even the same day, because they were both reported the same day.
Okay. Huh.
Yeah, they were both reported the same day. So, it was depressing to hear for a guy that I think really worked back. They worked hard to get back. They said he had dropped a tremendous amount of weight and gotten a lot faster, based on what he was told by management or by the coaching staff that he needed to do. And to come in and break his foot was just unfortunate for the guy.
Wow, that is unfortunate. And we definitely want him to have a speedy recovery. I mean, they did. They've added like three or four extra guys just on the offensive line, which is why I thought Sam Baker getting released just proved that all these other guys were at least ahead of him as far as development or where they wanted him to be. But that could be a big injury.
Yeah, the one thing that I did hear in just in a smaller circle is, and I can't recall the guy's name now, but the Pro Bowl guard that was released by Philadelphia, Chip Kelly, a little earlier this week. Apparently, Atlanta is one of the teams that's been reaching out trying to negotiate with him as well. So maybe they had this guy in the plans as well. I mean, certainly that $4.5 million, close to $5 million in cap space they gained by releasing Sam Baker could certainly be used to go after this guy.
I think is it Evan Mathis or something like that?
Evan Mathis, that was exactly his name. Yep, that's the guy.
Yeah, because we didn't get to it yet in the end zone, but Trent Cole signing with Indianapolis, that was a guy that I was hoping Atlanta would go after, but they didn't. I don't even think they even picked up the phone, but, yeah, I wouldn't mind seeing Mathis come down this way.
Yeah, I think that would be a great pickup for Atlanta. I mean, the guy was sturdy. I think they said he played like 46 games out of the last, you know, 3 years or however many, you know, years he's been in, not really injured. And, of course, he's a Pro Bowler. So, I mean, why not? Why not give him the money? A guy that's proven himself, especially I'm sure with Chip Kelly's offense up there, he has to. I would imagine that he fits the zone blocking scheme, at least from a speed perspective.
Yeah, it's going to be real interesting to see what Atlanta does with his personnel. I think it's an open door policy right now for them. I think they're just looking at all of the talent that they have, and they're just going to sift through it, and they're going to, you know, realistically let this training camp determine. So don't be too surprised, with the exception of a few positions, that all of the positions are open as of right now.
Yeah, it's funny you said that, Coach, because that's the one thing that from the people that I heard from that actually went up to training camp and was checking things out, that was kind of the theme. Is you know, you saw guys like Robert Alford, who come out starting out playing as a defensive back, and then in the next set of plays you see him playing as a free safety, and then in the next set of plays you see guy, you know, Devin Hester out as a receiver, and then you see him in special team. So it seems to be the theme up there is, you know, let's get the overall theme is speed, but beyond that it's, hey, you know, if you can play this position better, let me see it. So competition seems to be the theme of at least Atlanta's training camp so far, from what I've been told. And I know we've got Big Sweet talking about it a little bit further from his personal perspective, but that seems to be the theme, is that competition has been pushed, and it's up tempo has been pushed.
Yep, that is that was actually one of the points we were going to hit on next, is that Quinn does value speed. And if you look at Seattle's defense, which is what it's probably going to be based on, it won't be the carbon copy, but he loves speedy swarm guys. That's the way he kind of, you know, the impact hitters, but everybody swarms to the ball all the time. And, you know, signing Vic Beasley, which, by the way, was 4 years, $14.495 million, 8.8 is the signing bonus on that one. Will definitely help the speed on that one. But, yeah, he values speed, because every report I have heard has the word speed or fast or quick in it. So either Yeah, go ahead.
No, I was going to say that was a thing that you hear out of his mouth constantly. And the other thing, Jeremy, that he seems to really, really push is camaraderie. And he does whatever it takes. There was a lot of people – at chattering about his recent tweets, and he's very active on the Twitter circuit. But his most recent tweet was he said happy birthday to Tupac and quoted one of Tupac's quotes. And, you know, for those who've been kind of keeping up with him over or with the Falcons, not before minicamp, but even some of the earlier camps, the rookie camps and so forth, he has different playlists every day that has a wide range from, you know, from your Tupacs all the way out to your AC/DCs to whomever. He just, you know, kind of floats the gambit. But he pushes those types of practices that seem to be extremely, very extreme. Hey, I want you to stay focused, do whatever you need to do, move. But then he, at the same token, he's walking around talking to players, chatting it up, and he's really pushing that camaraderie aspect, and that can only help.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, the easiest way to describe this to our fans and listeners is that's called street cred.
Right. Right, right.
It's funny because it's true.
That's right, Homer, it is. But
there's that track. There's the track, Coach Hill.
Yeah, I see.
I haven't gotten a chance to use that a lot. So I
know. We haven't heard that in a while.
We haven't all agreed on the same thing in a long time. So,
hey, man, we keep it interesting. That's what we're told
to do. I know. That's what makes us fun is that we don't just sit here and pat each other's backs and sugarcoat things. And I'm sure as this season goes along, there'll be a lot of things we go at each other about.
I can't wait for fantasy football, man, for our picks, man, so I can – take my throne back. I'm coming for Coach Hill this year.
Bethany, I have a interesting concept for maybe starting a league involving all of us. I'll get with you guys off air about it. I had an interesting idea earlier. I'll see what you guys think.
Hey, I'm all for it. If it gives me the opportunity to smash the great Coach Hill, I'm with it.
Hey, I'm with you on that one too. But I do feel that what I know about Coach Hill and his expertise and what he is truly good at, I feel like we might be in for it.
I mean, I'm gonna lose. I mean, we all know Coach Hill does. But hey, I got to keep myself motivated somehow. You can't outteach the teacher, but you know, I'm gonna try anyway.
Exactly. There'll be so much smack talk on this show. It may be an hour and a half of smack talk before it's over with. But the thing I wanted to get to real quick before we get into that segment we had a couple weeks ago, the You're the Coach. Justin Blaylock, who was a guard for this team released in early February, has decided to retire. Does this surprise you guys?
Not me. I'm privy to some players, some personal relationships with some of the players, both current and former, and from what I understand, much like Jason Snelling, Justin did very well with his money, and he was very prevalent in the business world, and he also valued his health, and from what I understand, he's also a perfectionist, and he's one of those guys that feels like if I can't perform to my caliber, then I'm not going to do it. And so no, it didn't surprise me. But I wish him the best. I'm sure he's going to resurface at some point from a coaching perspective or what have you. But I think he's going to be okay financially.
No, not surprised. If he, you know, again, if you take the time to find investments, you must, as a player, you must look at how you're going to leave the game. Are you going to be forced out, or will you be able to leave on your own terms? And those who discipline themselves and are in a position to leave on their own terms is the best way to go. And it sounds like that Mr. Blaylock has done that over the last couple of years, that he's looked at where he wants to go and what his next step was going to be after football. Because it's not a matter of if, it's just when your services would no longer be needed. And that's not being harsh. That's just in anything and everything that we do. Even in just working a job every day, in the meal, if you will, no pun intended. At some point, that day comes when you no longer punch the clock. So, if he was smart with his money, it sounds like he's a young man that was very smart with his money. If he feels now is the time, and if he doesn't feel that he's up to that level of what the organization needs him to be as a player and himself as a professional, then you know, kudos to him in exiting stage left and moving on and transitioning to other phases of his life.
Yeah, on Revolution Zone here on Impact Media, I've gotten a chance to speak to about two-thirds of the players on the Texas Revolution of the one of the indoor football teams we follow here. And one of the questions I ask each one of them each week is what are their goals for football and then what are their goals for after football? Because, you know, like you said, you know, tomorrow's not promised for the for anybody, and you never know if today's your last day on the field. So you kind of have to be thinking ahead of the game.
Hey, man, you know what? If I was a player and when you start thinking about CTE and I think about guys like John Abraham and even going back to the late, great Junior Seau and, you know, just numerous of players that we haven't even heard about, you know, that's some scary stuff, man. I mean, to not be able to remember the last year of your life and it's got to start, you know, I've talked to some of the, you know, current players that, it, you know, it's something that they think about a lot and you have to these days. If they're smart, again, I'm hoping that you know, Coach, you guys are pushing it still. I'm sure you are to your players. Be financially fit, you know, responsible, man, because, you know, you never know, man. When that day comes, you want to be able to do like Snelling, who really got spooked by the fact that he had the first concussion he had was all it took. He had one concussion, he was done. But because, again, this guy was a businessman that took his money and did things with it. And I hope that more players start following that trend.
Yeah, I agree with you, Rich. I mean, I think that, you know, you have to be smart with your money. And, you know, a lot of times I tell players, you know, don't spend outside of your necessities until you retire. That's the point of you retiring. You know, save your money. Because, again, you're not going to walk out here and make that same type of money unless you're running a company tomorrow. It's just not going to happen. So be wise with your spending. Spend only your necessities while you're playing in the season, and then, you know, save that money so that when you retire, you can enjoy those things that you like to do with life.
Absolutely, and I know we're up against a time constraint. You guys got, like, 5 minutes?
Oh, absolutely. I'm good.
Okay.
Yes, go ahead. I got five.
Okay. Then in the last 5 minutes for you, Coach, once again, we're going to do the you're the coach, but instead of offense, we're going to talk. Apparently we have our own sound effects now. I think we have a ghost in the studio, by the way, but we'll talk about that off air. But we're going to do the you're the coach, and this time it's the defensive scheme. So, Coach Hill, we'll start with you. If you're the defensive coordinator of this Falcons team, what kind of defense are you running?
Well, one of the things I'm going to do, and I'm going to preview you guys to something that I used as a coach for a number of years. The Seattle Seahawks have a tackling video that's out. I think they've actually privileged it to the public through YouTube. It's called Seahawks Tackling 2015. And what you're looking for, and this is why you're looking for speed, one of the things that you want to do is be able to move around and get guys that can tackle well. One of the things Seattle has always been known for is tackling well. Expect the Falcons to be a very fast tackling team. Now, as far as the scheme is concerned, the scheme is going to be dictated against the offenses that I have to cover. Basically, if you're running spread, wildcat, different things. So I will have a base defense, probably running something of a 3-4 because they like the linebacker package as my base. But understand that with this defense, it's going to be very hybrid. It's going to be very it's going to have a lot of moving parts in it, a lot of fast parts in it, and a lot of tackling points in it. So expect this team to be very aggressive on defense. I'm trying to compare them to the team they had when I think Deion was there. If you remember how aggressive they were, you know, when they were all dressed in black and they were aggressive tackling machines. And that's what I think you're going to see in defenses coming back, because now receivers are getting bigger, faster, stronger. Linemen are getting faster. They can get up on linebackers so fast now. So now you have to have this speed. If I'm the defensive coordinator of this team, I'm running a base. My base defense is going to be a 3-4 with a lot of linebackers playing it, because I got to cover a lot of grounds and gaps and areas. But we're going to be a very aggressive, and we're going to be like a school of fish. If you've ever gone to a lake or you look into an aquarium with little small fish, when you drop food in one area, everybody go at one motion. You can't tell which was the lead fish because everybody moves simultaneously. So it's going to be a lot of synchronized movement of this defense and play. So, again, I'm a 3-4 guy with them. I'm speed, and we're getting to the ball. And every time I'm there, my goal is to get three players minimum to the football at any given time.
All right, Reggie?
Well, again, obviously you can't outteach the teacher. Coach Hill, being in that profession, spoke exactly what I was going to say. I mean, the 3-4 seems to be the scheme that they're building their players. Those are the types of players that they're picking. In the secondary, they've definitely gotten a lot bigger and a lot faster in the secondary. And you always had already had guys like William Moore and even Trufant and Offer to a degree. Ishmael, who are very physical guys that strike at the point of attack. You bring in a Raheem Morris, who's been a disciple of several other great coaches, more in the Tampa 2 schemes, I believe, Coach, and you can correct me on that. But I think that's kind of where the stewardship that he comes from. But, again, speed, it just seems to be, I think you'll see a hybrid. I think it'll be a lot like last year where you weren't really sure what base they were in. I think 3-4, again, is where they're at. They're prodding Tyson Jackson and Paul Solei to start clogging the middle. And they've just got guys like Beasley, who one of the things that came out of camp with him and some of the earlier plays that he was is that the guy is darn near impossible to stop on that first step. His first step is just insane. So, I mean, they've got those guys that come in and kill the quarterback. So I'm excited. I'm more excited about what I'm going to see defensively than offensively with the Falcons. Obviously, it's where we needed the most improvement. But it seems like that we're on our way. So again, that's just my little bit of whipped cream on top of what Coach Hill has already said.
Yeah, exactly. As we've said pretty much this entire show as far as the Falcons, it's about speed. It's about swarming. Kind of, for the most part, as far as their tackling, it's kind of that rugby style like you're talking about out in Seattle. That's the way they preach it, is the rugby-style tackle. And that's thing the Falcons have – Yeah, that's the one thing the Falcons have not been that good at in previous years is tackling. So I look forward to seeing that. And I've told a lot of fans, I still don't see a dominant pass rush right now, so don't expect the sack total to be that much higher than it is right now.
Well, that's the thing is that, you know, it seems like they're masking the possibility that that's not the case, especially losing guys like Prince Shimbo, you know, who was going to be an integral cog in this thing, right? But what how they're masking it or covering up for it is their secondary very quietly is becoming very good. So I mean, it'll be one of those things where your quarterback may have a little bit more time to throw the ball, but when he does, we're going the other way, and I think that's going to help us until we can get to that dominant pass rush that we've been so wonderfully wanting forever.
Well, exactly. You know what? If I can add this real quickly, guys, they're going to have a pass rush. The way they're going to set this pass rush up is with the linebackers. Look for the linebackers to have a lot of pass rush, because what they're going to do is walk some of these guys up, step some of these guys back slow, and what they're going to do, they're going to have quarterbacks, because quarterbacks look for presets. And, you know, it's kind of like a magic trigger. You show one thing, you do another. They might show up 3-4 coming out and slowly walk another guy up on the end, and then they got a 4-3. And then at the time he goes to check out and try to find and reestablish the MAC, they walk that guy back and walk the middle linebacker down. So it's going to be a lot of confusion in this defense, and as long as you got a quarterback thinking, you get a quarterback sacked. And I can just tell you for a fact that's how it works. So look for them to walk up a lot of guys, walk back a lot of guys. You're going to see a lot of things in the defense, from guys going to a traditional stance with their hands down on the ground to guys standing up. You're going to see a lot of this. And any time a quarterback has to think about all of what he sees pre-snap and then at the snap of the ball, you know, you got a guy, this guy was here on the line, now he's dropped back into coverage. And all these things, that's where your pass rush for Atlanta is going to come. It's going to come with a lot of mixture in what they do defensively and what they're going to do to make offenses try to pick up blocks and blitzes. And that's where they're going to get you. And they're going to make guys pay. So once you get the ball out your hand and it's a dump out into the flats of the running back, I'm telling you, they're going to come like a pack of dogs looking for the kill. You're going to find 3 to 5 guys around the football, and they're going to be really coaching these guys up on the sideline. So the enthusiasm, Reginald, that you spoke about last year, you will see this year in Atlanta. You're going to see coaches jumping around. You're going to see coaches very animated. You're going to see guys being coached not just on the field, but off the field and throughout the entire game.
And that's a great point, and I was going to meant to say this earlier. I'd be remiss to talk about what the great things that I have heard coming up about Rashid Hageman, who was the second-round big defensive tackle that we brought in last year. They coached this guy, apparently, up so much in the offseason just about his attitude and his approach to the game. And from what I've been able to understand is when he's in the game, if you're double-teaming him at best. At the very minimum, he's drawing double teams because he has now decided and drank the Kool-Aid that he can be a dominant pass rusher. And if people remember, man, this guy was supposed to be a first-round draft pick out of Minnesota. He just had some character flaws that kept him out of the first round. So, again, you got Adrian Claiborne, who had been working with Chuck Smith before he got picked up by the Cincinnati Bengals. But, I mean, these are guys that people have forgotten about that can still play the game. You know, Adrian Claiborne was a first-round draft pick. He just didn't pan out in Tampa Bay. But, again, these are two guys that you're hearing a lot about that they're demolishing this offensive line getting back in the backfield. So, I mean, we can't forget about those guys as well.
No, we definitely can't. And Coach, I know you got to get out of here, but Stat Guy couldn't find it, but I did. The people that got the Viking Stadium naming rights is U.S. Bank. So it will be U.S. Bank Stadium.
That would make sense.
They're out of Minneapolis. So
that was that big company I couldn't think of. Yeah, U.S. Bank has definitely got the coin to do it. And if it was, what did you say, 210 or 220? That's a steal for a bank like U.S. Bank.
The article even mentioned that. That is an absolute steal. That's only $8.8 million for the next, like, 20 years, 30 years, whatever the deal is.
Man, yeah, they got a steal. Yeah. That was an inside job.
Yeah.
let me correctly clean that up. That was a golf course deal.
Yes.
Okay.
That was a back nine over some beers.
Absolutely.
All right, guys, I'm out of here. Yeah, I guess I'll
All right, is thanks for joining us, Coach, and we'll see you in a couple weeks.
All right.
Let's see. It really wasn't. It's a bunch of one-liners as far as end zone is. If there's nothing that really sticks out to you guys, we may just stay in Falcons because Mark Cooper should be joining us here shortly. If that's all right with you, Reggie.
Hey, you know I'm always okay with that.
Well, let's get a little more into Raheem Morris in this secondary. You mentioned it a little bit. He is pretty keen on the Tampa, too, because that's pretty much what got him that starting gig as the head coach in Buccaneer world. I didn't really like him much as a head coach. I actually felt bad for him towards the end because he was kind of getting a raw deal about it. What do you think he brings to this team that's going to actually change this secondary?
Well, I can tell you what I've heard so far that he's brought to the team is he's brought attitude to that secondary. There have been a couple of scuffles between Julio and Roddy, and you know Roddy's always going to be in a mix somewhere, but between the receiving core and the secondary. I mean, they're not backing down. There's a lot of barking going on, and as well as he's that guy that's been getting out on the field in the midst of play going, hey, this is what you should have done versus what you did. So I think that's what he brings to the team. I mean, first and foremost, is attitude. And of course, when you've been I've always, you know, even in my own business, you know, it's nice to have guys that are smarter than you, but it's also nice to have guys that have also sat in the same seat that you sat in. So with him being a former ex-coach or ex-head coach, I should say, that's obviously got a farewell for a first-time coach like Dan Quinn because he understands the nuances of running an entire team. You know, he knows what that role entails. So early returns coming back has been just about attitude.
Yeah, that was part of the culture he taught down in Tampa Bay because that was obviously when I was I covered the team pretty closely. But I do like that he – you know, just to go over the same things we just said about Quinn, that he teaches speed and that swarm ability and to tackle correctly and that rugby style. Raheem Morris is dead on for that kind of coach. Quinn can pretty much go, he can look and go, Coach Raheem, just go work with the secondary, and I'll see you in an hour. He won't, you know, kind of, you don't have to babysit Raheem Morris as far as secondary.
Absolutely, and that's the great thing is this is another guy that you don't have to babysit. The other thing that was important to note, I've been reading some other things about him, is, you know, he kind of feeds into some of the nutrition philosophies of Tony Gonzalez. I think Julio Jones had tried it one time. Of course, it's a very disciplined approach to nutrition. Not really common sense in that you just eat what your body understands. It, you know, hey, I'm looking at ingredients. If I don't know what polysorbate 80 is, my body doesn't know what it is. But I know what milk is, so my body knows what it is. And that's kind of the basis of Tony Gonzalez's diet. It's actually helped me out quite a bit. But he has been able to, you know, kind of broadcast that to a lot of those players, and they're starting to buy into it. And I think that's going to end up eventually, hopefully, helping us with injuries. Because the better, you know, of course they are in shape and nutritionally, the less injuries we should see. I mean, look at Tony's career.
Absolutely. He didn't have a major injury in, what, 14 years?
Right, exactly.
Yeah, he was doing something right. But the other thing I wanted to get to also is, obviously, with a new coaching staff, we knew what the old coaching staff was trying to do with Devin Hester as far as offense. We've said on the show we wouldn't mind seeing him back as a defensive back. But right now, the reports are that his offensive role is very uncertain. Is there a place in this offense for him, or should he maybe just be a special teamer or move to defense again?
I think there is. I think, again, you'll probably see him a little bit more specialized. In his role, I think we'll still see him in a receiver's role in those brief instances. Unfortunately, there were a couple of instances where I think he could have, you know, he had some high-impact throws or passes that he dropped. But then again, there was some where, you know, he did what he was supposed to do. I think the bar has just been raised so high, and there's obviously a youth movement going on. They've got guys like Hankerson and even some of the rookies that they brought in. Seem to be really performing well. I think they're just not as focused on the offensive side as much as they are defense. I think that's what just what you're seeing. Offensively, we weren't having very many issues in the grand scheme of things. I just think that the main focus right now is defense, and it just hasn't shown itself yet offensively.
Yeah, he's just such a special player, and it goes back to anybody that's played a NCAA college video game or anybody that knows anything about college sports. A lot of times you recruit kids and you brand them with this tag of being an athlete. You're not sure where you're going to put them yet on the field. You're trying to discover that position that they're just so natural at or so great at. And I feel like Hester kind of fits the mold of that athlete. Like, we know he's played defensive back before, and he's pretty good at that. We know, obviously, that he can play wide receiver, and he wasn't that bad at that either. His forte, by far, is returning kicks and punts. You're just trying to plug him in and figure out exactly where he fits the best.
Right, and I think that, you know, with Kyle Shanahan, right now there are just so many other starting players that still have yet to learn this offense. I just think that, you know, with him, he's a skilled position. And, you know, short of knowing, you know, what the count or what the calls mean and you know, the check downs and all of those types of little nuances mean, I mean, that's just kind of one of those guys you just say go out there and just run left and go catch the ball. I mean, he's just that type of player. So I wouldn't be too concerned about it. I think Devin's going to be here as long as he wants to be.
Yeah, I absolutely agree as far as that. And, you know, once again, time will tell as to what role he has, and maybe the fact that we don't know means Dan Quinn already does, and he's just not telling us.
Well, right, and I mean, I think you can also look at Roddy's statement about, you know, how many passes there probably will be or there won't be in the case of his statement. I think there'll be a lot of focus on the running game. You know, I think we'll see more of that. Obviously, going to a zone blocking scheme kind of, you know, dictates that. So I think the offense is just changing face a little bit, man. So I think Devin will be fine. Obviously, they're so accustomed to having the ball thrown 40 times, so they may be getting a little antsy, but I think they'll be fine.
Well, on another one of our shows, and I'm not just trying to aimlessly plug other shows we have on here, but on Jaguar Zone, when we talk about the Jaguars, I say each and every week I look at the stat line for Blake Bortles, and I say I don't care if you're a first-year quarterback or if you're Peyton Manning, all the way up, you know, all the way up to a veteran. To me, you should only be throwing the ball no more than, I think, to just to simplify it, between 30 and 35 times a game is a maximum. I don't want anybody throwing more than, honestly, about 28 times as far as live throws, you know, with your arm, because it's just like a pitcher with a pitch count. When he gets up around 100, you really want to think about getting him out of the game, because it's just going to tear the arm up more than it is actually succeed in the game.
Well, actually, absolutely. There's no balance with that, you know. And you know, we've often prodded, and I've often poked it at your second team there, or your first team, whichever, your 1A team. But Jacksonville's made some very, very good moves in this. You know, we got you guys down there in Jacksonville this year. I plan on being at that game. I think we talked about probably getting down there together. But I think Jacksonville's gonna surprise some people this year.
Yeah, I think Gus knows he's on the hot seat if they don't win more than a handful of games. But, yeah, they've made a lot of good moves. And like I say, I have 32 favorite teams. I kind of favor the Falcons and Jaguars because it's teams we cover and we're so close to covering those teams and stuff like that. But, yeah, with what I know with Jacksonville, they're going to be a lot of fun this year. And that battle in Jacksonville between the Falcons and the Jaguars is going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, I'm not going that far, but yeah.
Well, honestly, if I'm the Falcons this year, I got to kind of go with a theory. And Colin Cowherd was talking about this as far as recruiting for a defense to go with your offense. And he was making the point that Bill Polian, who used to run the Colts, I believe, used to say, "We have Peyton Manning. We have a quick hitting offense. A lot of times we're playing with the lead going into the fourth quarter. So when we go to recruit people to be on the team, when we go to draft, we go to bring in free agents, develop our own players, we're not so worried about the pass rush because in the fourth quarter that's not that big. You know that if people are playing from behind because you have a big lead, they're going to throw a lot. So you want to make sure your secondary is good." I think the Falcons should go with that kind of scheme right now as far as this is a quick-hitting offense. It's finally got a run game. It's finally got guys that can catch consistently coming out of the backfield. You want to put up a lot of points quickly, and then you want to make sure that your linebackers and secondary are going to stop any kind of pass attempt.
Right, and again, the what I think, too, is the dark horse in all of this scenario, and we've spoken about this before, Seattle, and they're not taking away from their talent level, but you got to know that the culture and the attitude and the behavior on the sidelines and just being free and loose to play had a lot to do and has a lot to do with the way that they play the game. And I think that's the big thing that's being brought to Atlanta is that they're not being forced to be presidential. They're not being forced to be professional, so to speak, and, oh, you can't show emotion, and if you do that. And I think that's what you're going to see as the biggest change in how Atlanta Falcons play football is that these guys are playing and they're loving the game again. Quinn has brought that to the team already. And I think that's what's going to be the major improvement in this team this year.
Yeah, definitely so. And I see that our guest is on the line here. So without further ado, it's something I want to start, especially when the season starts, I want to start doing a weekly tailgate report. And I made some other friends at a tailgate event, the 929 Tailgate Fest, the other day. So, you know, definitely want to give those people the platform to come on and talk about the stuff they do as well. But one of my favorite tailgates, and, of course, my favorite MC of that tailgate, Mr. Mark Cooper of the ATL Falcoholics joins us on the Falcon Zone. How you doing, Mark?
Big Sweet. Big Sweet, what's up, Reggie? What's up, Jeremy?
Doing good over here, man. Good to hear your voice, man.
Hey, man, good to hear yours, too, man. Jeremy, it was a hot one last Saturday, wasn't it?
Oh, man, it was Hotlanta day for sure.
Oh, man, we had a great time last Saturday with 929 game, the game's first Atlanta Tailgate Fest, which I really think was a success for the first time out. You know, nothing's perfect, but the little tweaks that they can make going forward, man, is going to be for a great event. I just wish they could just get some sprinklers out there because trying to tailgate on that asphalt in 94-degree weather, even under the tents, as Jeremy can attest, even in the shade, it got kind of hot out there.
Yeah, I was fortunate that I went and said hey to some people and showed my face to some people and introduced myself to some other new people. But yeah, I was fortunate enough to get to hang out with you guys most of the day because it was just the ideal spot to stay out of the heat.
Oh man, but Jeremy, you know that's how we do with the game. You know, unfortunately because of the heat, we really didn't do too much moving around like we usually do, but. The setup is the same, whether it's a Falcons game or if we happen to go to a concert somewhere. We set up the tents and the music, set up the you know, so everybody can come down, very hospitable, have a good time, sit down, take a load off, enjoy the festivities.
Yeah, we made a lot of new friends. We had a lot of people approach you guys' tent and everything, and it was fun getting to talk to all these new people that, you know, nobody really knew who a lot of people were, a lot of new faces and stuff like that, and it was fun getting to meet some of the other groups, and it was fun when they would come up and want to know what you guys were all about.
Oh, yeah, it's always a pleasure. You know, like I tell everybody, it's a competition, but it's fun for our crew and other crews because we all know each other for the most part. And at the same time, you get a chance to meet, you know, new people. Like, I hate to tell Reggie this. Reggie, they got a tailgate crew out of San Francisco, man. They
came.
Just about to get to them. Hey, man, they came and showed out. And this is and. No matter what I do, even when I meet people in networking, I'm thinking about stealing ideas, little things to make it better. Hey, man, regardless of who, I know they go for San Francisco 49ers. I can't fault them for that. But anybody that puts up 12 flagpoles at a tailgate event gets my vote. Man, they were San Francisco.
That would have been nice.
Hey.
I mean, you know, I don't expect anything different from the Falcoholics, ATL Falcoholics, man. I mean, nobody's doing it like you guys, especially, again, Jeremy, I tell you, the New Orleans event, and I know there may be some, it may not necessarily go down this year like that, but that is a must-see event when the ATL Falcoholics invade on New Orleans. So I expect you to step your game up. That's what you do. That's what y'all do, which is why we deal with you guys, so I'm not surprised.
Hey. Oh, we're stepping the game up. As a matter of fact, I'm going to get on into what I saw at minicamp. When I got out to minicamp, Peyton Gallagher, who's does all the advanced travel for the Falcons, he was like, we can't wait for you guys to get to Dallas, man. We've been trying to tell Dan Quinn how y'all guys do it. So if anybody can get to Dallas, man, we're really gonna do it big in Dallas this year, being the fact that New Orleans game is on a Thursday. We can't really get down like we want to. So if you can get to Dallas, man, ATL Falcoholics is that's really going to set us off for the season, man.
Well, definitely let me know because I will be there. I already have my flight and my hotel already set up.
There you go.
I will be in Dallas.
There you go. And, Jeremy, I'm going to get into what I saw out on the first day of minicamp. Hey, man, I'm going to tell you right now, it is definitely a new era in Flowery Branch. The most obvious thing that you get when you get there is the fact of the music. You know what I'm saying? The music he's bringing out from Seattle. They played music through the entire practice. And, you know, he released a sample of his playlist on Twitter, which has some songs on it. You kind of get out there, okay, all right, it's going to be some of this mainstream stuff. All right, and then when you get out there, and, you know, I hope it's all adults listening, you know, you hear Lil Jon and Too Short, Shake That Monkey. And all those. I'm telling you, man, it's a different type of vibe. It's a different type of energy. And the thing about it is, that's what I really noticed from the tempo. Everybody wants to see how the tempo of practice is. With that music blaring and the beats per minute, everything moves fast. Even the guys that can't dance because it's music, don't have rhythm, they move fast. Everything moves fast. Another difference that you'll see is if you've been to the facility up on the hill up there. You know, they say they want to compete every time. There is a scoreboard up on the hill now.
Wow.
It's a scoreboard on the hill. When they run into periods, they run into periods. When they did the two-minute period the other day, I think one team had 10, other team had 9. So they're going to be – it's more of that Bill Belichick situational-type football, so they're going to be able to see it and be able to compete. Hey, man, and it's good things that are going to be coming out from Flyer Branch. Of course – in helmets and shorts, so, you know, everybody's a Super Bowl champion this time of the season. But to see a lot of the new guys out there flying around, hey, man, that Vic Beasley is going to be special. I don't care what anybody says about him not having a move or anything like that. That first step off the line, buddy, hell, he's gonna get some people. Once he learns a couple moves, it's going to be incredible, man. I mean, just the speed of everybody going around. course, I kept my eyes on Tevin Coleman to see he and Devontae Freeman. It's going to be some good things coming out at the backfield. One player to keep your eye on, man, just caught my attention to jump right off, was Justin Hardy, the wide receiver out of ECU.
Yeah.
I'm talking about if you've seen Julio Jones practice, and you see how smooth it is and how just naturally, Justin Hardy is the exact same model. You know, they may push him inside, but he can play after. But, I mean, he just jumps right off the page, man. And got Ricardo Allen, man, has been doing some strong things out there. So I'm looking forward to see how it goes in training camp. That first week, they'll still be in helmets and shorts. So that second week, I'd be like, good to see him wearing the pads. But if people get a chance to go up to Flyer Branch, man, there's some really good things going on. This Dan Quinn era, not saying we're going to the Super Bowl this year, but that new energy in the building is going to push us beyond where we've been the past two seasons.
Definitely, and it's fun to hear you and some other people I've talked about get so excited about it, because a lot of times new head coach, people don't know what to expect and different things like that. But that's why I wanted to get you on, because you actually went up there and braved the heat, because I think it's a lot hotter now than it even was at the Tailgate Fest.
Ooh, man, let me tell you, and it's worse, because it's just four football fields and no shade. What, then the cloud come through, nothing. I mean, it was just hot. If you can bear the heat, it's hot. And then, like I tell people about yesterday with kids today, I said, depending on what you're bringing your kids out here, if you just want to see a little action up close and get autographs, maybe come for the second half of practice. But anybody want to brave it, man, it was definitely something to see. And another thing I noticed was Dan Quinn came to sign autographs at the end of practice.
Oh.
When they broke down to do stretching, Dan Quinn went over and acknowledged the crowd. Like I said, it's a totally different energy. I mean, he is a rah-rah style coach. And I used to hate with all, I used to talk about Pete Carroll as a rah-rah style coach. Well, I take it back. I like the rah-rah style coach because it's the younger coach. That's what the younger coaches do. You know, it's a younger vibe in there, man, with the DJ out there and everything. And I think that's going to do well with the players. Like I said, it's going to bring everybody. I mean, they're working. Don't get me wrong. The music's playing. You might see somebody dance inside, but I mean, they are working. Dan Quinn's got them fired up, got them pumped. Man, they do a drill over the dummies, like an agility drill, to run to another drill. You know, they line them on both sides, and that's to get everybody motivated. But I'm telling you, man, it's something to see out there. It's stuff that you can buy into, that you can say, okay, all right, we didn't do this. I like this. I can buy into it. Now let's see how it translates into wins going forward, but the attitude and everything is right out of Friday Branch right now.
That's awesome. And, of course, I'm on with Reggie. Had to leave us for a previous engagement, but we'll get more from him later on in a couple weeks. Of course, we're on with Mark Cooper of the ATL Falcoholics, which you can also hear your tailgate report each Sunday from 1 to 4 p.m. on the Dryer Buzz Show. On WAOK 1380, right?
Right, that's correct. That's right. Matter of fact, for last, it was so funny because you know when you do it, you don't know who's listening to you, right? So last week we did a little thing on location, and as soon as I'm coming out to leave, I have my truck parked on the street. A guy approaches me, "Hey, you the tailgate man? Hey, I want to tell you what you need to say on the air." So I got this guy, you know, so. It's not just your ordinary tailgate report. I mean, I'm not trying. They don't want me to be the reporter guy, so to speak. You know, so how I bring it to you is how I bring the tailgate report, you know, from my view, a fan's view, a tailgater's view. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, I appreciate you having me on, man, you know, and being able to share on the sports and definitely talk Falcons, man.
Yeah, it was a blast. I'm glad I got to hang out with you guys for as long as I did. And it wasn't just the heat. I mean, you guys know how to throw it down, and I don't know. I'm not going to question the judges because I'm sure those other teams made some good stuff. But if you've ever been anywhere near you guys' tailgate and tried some of Chris's food off the grill, I don't know why he don't win everything.
Hey, you know, I don't. You know, here's the deal, and you know, we won the inaugural grill with the Falcons in 2013, and that's cool. And I tell you, like I tell everybody else, and yes, I believe our food is good. You know what I'm saying? But you have guys out there that are these competitive barbecue guys or whatever.
Yeah.
So when they want to call these grills, I tell them just like this, and this is how some of how we tailgate. I say we may not have the best food out here, but we're gonna throw the best party. So this is the place where you want to be. A lot of guys get caught up in just the food aspect. Now I'm not gonna mention my neighbor's names that you hung out with next to us, but you know, they hang their hat on just cooking. And to me, that's not necessarily tailgating. You know what
right.
I'm saying? You have to have the combination of the food and the atmosphere and whatever. So we don't get them. We're not really worried about, yeah, we want to win. Of course you want to be able to brag. But because we hadn't seen each other together since January, you know, we really just wanted to come out and have a good time. And he kind of dictated us, hey, well, let's cook everything up. Let's have fun. If anybody wants to eat and wants to have a cold drink and just sit out, hey, that's fine. And that's what we're about, because we don't meet any strangers. You know what I'm saying? You know, Hugh Douglas came and stopped by. And another guy from CBS local came, you know, whatever. You know, we don't meet anybody that's a stranger. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, we just like to have a good time. Like I said, we might not have the best food. I mean, my man cooked his little gourmet burger, whatever. That's fine. But all you're going to remember from his experience is his burger. You come to us, you're going to remember everything. You're going to remember the communion every 15 minutes. You know, what dances we're going or whatever the case may be, man. So we're just glad everybody comes out. We just like to have a good time. And it's like, for us, it's like a family reunion every week. So that's really why we really love football season, because we got the football and now we can see each other and party and get ready, man, to take this thing on.
Yeah, absolutely. And I had a handful of friends. That's why I went to hang out with your neighbors and a couple of the other ones for a minute, just to see what everybody's been up to, because it has been a long time since I got to see everybody. And you know, obviously you're the master of ceremonies for sure. You always keep the you always drop some just amazing beats and keep everybody up and moving. And of course you got Chris holding down the grill master for sure. And
yep.
And you got Andre or Dre, whichever he prefers to go by at the moment, who is just almost the ambassador at that point.
He definitely is our ambassador. Yes,
absolutely. And some of the people that dropped by, I guess, that followed me around a few places, and I'm not trying to give myself credit or nothing, but I got talking to them other places, and they said, "Well, yeah, are you here with somebody?" I'm like, "Well, I'm hanging out with these guys right here." So a lot of them come by, and they may be dropping by the yellow lot.
Oh yeah, the yellow lot was well represented. I had let me give a shout out to the Weed Act crew. We're probably about two rows back. They've been in the yellow lot with us for the long time, man. You know, they're friends of ours. You know, as a matter of fact, a few years back, before they started doing all the construction in downtown uptown Charlotte of the minor league baseball stadium, they actually tailgated with us. We just joined forces and took over a whole corner. So, like I said, you know, going out there is good to see everybody else, because, you know, just think about it. Somebody's got a red and black jersey on, hey, they're instantly your friend, especially on the road. But and the good thing about the Tailgate Fest is the way the season ended last year. And that's just how fickle we are. If the season doesn't go well, then tailgating doesn't go well. So it was good to see everybody back out, see my friends from the Dirty Dirty Tailgate family and other folks out there, man. It's just a real good thing, you know. And like I was trying to tell Mike, the guy that put this event together, I said, next year spread some of the other things out, the other vendors and what out, so people can – it'll force people to really walk around. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
You see something different on different out, because you really want to see what everybody does. You know what I'm saying? Like I was speaking about the San Francisco folks. I mean, they had everything. And not only did they have everything, and this is the difference between them and our neighbors, they let you know they had everything. Mm-hmm. They walked around in force and let you know they had everything. They had that spirit. You know what I'm saying? And that's really what tailgating is about. And I'm glad that they were there. And I'm glad it's the Atlanta Tailgate Fest. That doesn't have to be locked to one team. You know, it's like I said, it's about tailgating. And I liked it.
Yeah, absolutely. And, of course, in only my kind of fashion, and if you want, you can kick in what a few of my friends said. When I told them I went back there and spoke to the 49er people just to see what they were all about, my friend said, of course you did. But I try to be friendly with everybody. I wanted to see what they were all about and see what kind of group they really were. And they're, I think it may be next year when the 49ers are going to be playing here in Atlanta against the Falcons. They spoke about being in the yellow lot somewhere, so they may be banding together with you guys a couple times.
Hey, they've already been there. That same crew in the C championship game in 2012, they had a corner in the yellow lot, and the beauty about it, and I hate to steal this from the world champion Golden State Warriors, strength in numbers.
Yeah,
strength strength in numbers, because, and that's what I want the Falcon fans to start doing when we go on the road. Of course, everybody may or may not get a ticket to the game, but why not get in one spot and let everybody that's a Falcon fan come that way? And it's strength in numbers. And I'm telling you, when they came in 2012 for the NFC Championship, when they came in that NFC Championship game, they were deep. They were deep. And it wasn't, I mean, I'm talking about, man, they had a corner over there, man. I'm talking about it was just, looked like half of California was over there. You know,
yeah, absolutely. Go ahead.
And I just like that. I like that. I like that spirit. That's what I like from a good tailgate crew. That, you know, that's a, you know, you represent your team. You know, you're going to talk junk this day and you're going to talk junk that day. But before kickoff and even after, it's about the tailgating spirit. And those guys are always welcome to come out to anything that we do, anything they do. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed ribbing them about them being the remainder of the team. You know, so, you know, that, you know, good-hearted, even my neighbors. You know what I'm saying? Even my neighbors, they're welcome to come tailgate. You know, I don't meet anybody that's not a stranger. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, absolutely. So. And when they found out I was friends with you guys as well, because I do know a lot of them through some stuff I've done. They always speak highly of you guys. They enjoy the experience. And in fact, you said that's how you met one of them a couple years ago. Was he was hanging out next to you guys, and you guys compared some notes, I think.
Oh, yeah, we did. We did. We definitely did, you know. He knows a couple of people in the lot that he tailgates in. You know, it's just 6 degrees of separation, man. You really find out how small the world is. Everybody knows everybody. So, like I said, out there it's a competition, but it's still it's a friendly competition, and you're glad to see everybody. Like, if they hadn't shown up, it wouldn't have been good for me. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
And other crews, you know, that's good. I like to see, you know, and let me get back to the competition. You know, have some folks out there complaining about the food. Like I said, hey, man, it's just about fun. You win and you lose and you have a good time. You know, you have some guys out there seriously saying, I'm not going to do this anymore if I don't win. Hey, don't come out. If you're just coming out there just to win, then it's not the right event for you. You know what I'm saying? Tailgating is not about winning. It's about having a good time and cheering on no matter what it is. I'm like, if you're going to the Braves game, hey, just tailgate. If you're going to the concert, tailgate. Have a good time. You know, so, like I said, it's an event for everybody's event for the family. Like I said, it was a good first time out for 929 the game. I definitely had to give them the edge over the Falcons based upon the location. When it was at Mall of Georgia, everybody was kind of, you only had a certain amount of space. And because the Gwinnett Center let them have the entire parking lot, man, we had ample space. And that's what, you know, if you space it out, you really see, and it was a great event with the car show and the beer garden. You know, you bring in different aspects or whatever, because people might not want to go to the car show. But then they say, hey, man, look at that Ferrari right there. You know, it's the cars coming. Hey, let me go look at that McLaren. So it was a good thing for them, and I expect them to do it bigger and better next year.
Absolutely. The only thing I didn't get to partake in was the fourth event going on, because obviously there was the Tailgate Fest. I went and checked out the beer garden. Turns out I knew some people running it, so that was kind of cool to see them again. There was the car show, and I didn't make it inside for the cat show. Now, I don't know if you made it in there for that either.
No, I did not make it in there for the cat show. I did see the sign as I was leaving, and the funny thing about the cat show is Lakeside High School in the cab where I work, they used to have a cat show. So I was just chuckling as I was headed down Sugarloaf on the way home.
Yeah, unfortunately, I didn't get to make it in there because I'm sure there was more ferocious felines than any of the Panthers or Lions that we could see this year.
Exactly. Definitely more ferocious. Definitely. I don't know. Them Panthers in Carolina might be a little tough. I don't know, but we'll see.
Yep, definitely so. And since we did mention the 49ers groups, of course, they're the Spartans of the Niner Empire is the name of them. And I'll go ahead and give a shout-out to the main guy I talked to. That was Dave Kahn, who, I mean, they know how to throw down. They know how to represent. And that's they definitely, since I've used the vernacular, used all kinds of different phrases this year or this on this show, I'm going to say, yeah, they definitely rolled deep. There was at least probably 50 or 60 of them the other day.
Oh, they rolled. I mean, they rolled deep. And that's what you want to have, man. And that's that spirit. Whether you support the team, support your crew, or whatever. I mean, that's what you want to see. Walking around with the replica of the Lombardi Trophy, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, they brought it. And, you know, it could have just been a setup show. Just set the stuff up. Nothing else. they would have won. Like I said, 12 flagpoles, high, you know, great people, great action. Oh, man, that's what you want. That's what you want with a tailgate, whether they're of your team or an opponent. That's what you want to hear, and I give major props to them. I give them major props for them for coming out to an Atlanta event, and then I give them major props for bringing it like they usually do.
Yep, absolutely. I look forward to I think they're going to tailgate even some other Falcons games. I'll have to check with them on that. But before I let you go, because I know you are as busy as I am, as I like to say, I think you're busier, actually. what are the major away game tailgates that the Falcoholics are doing this year?
The Falcoholics this year, you know, usually, you know, our number one trip is New Orleans, but the schedule makers weren't kind to us this year.
No, not at all.
So we're going to take the New Orleans festivities to Dallas. Then catch us in Dallas September 27th, that weekend. We're going to be Nashville in October, and then we're going to make the North Carolina-Florida triangle, Carolina, Tampa, and Jacksonville in December. So we're going to be at those five. And I'm telling anybody out there who's never been on the road, this is the season to really go on the road with those games, for the exception of Dallas, that you can get to by car.
Right.
You know, definitely go. If you've never been to a Falcons game on the road, man, trust me, you need to go. Be loud. Hey, man, you never know how much they really appreciate it when they see fans on the road. Not just necessarily after the game, because, you know, we do a big pep rally in New Orleans every
right.
year. You know, before they leave the hotel, we take it out there, we bring the speaker and everything, and let them know that we're there. You know, we know you're in a hostile environment, but we let you know that we're there. And, I mean, it lifts them up so hard, man. And it's good to see, like I said, it's good to see Reggie and everybody in there. And, man, it does something about it. It makes the road games actually a little bit more sweeter than the home games. You know what I'm saying? When you see your folks, because you want to have a little bit more arrogance because you're on hostile territory. You know what I'm saying?
Exactly.
But, yeah, so we're gonna do those five road games this year. And hopefully, you know, we won't have to do too many more except for the Super Bowl, you know what I'm saying, after that. You know what I'm saying? Because we're going to be at home for the playoffs, and then Super Bowl going to take it on the road. You know what I mean?
Yep.
So
I absolutely
see
agree
everybody
with you
out
that.
There, man, you know, Jeremy's going to give you my info later. Hey, anybody want to go, or anybody on the road, anybody want to tell you at home, by all means, man, you're welcome to come hang out with us in the yellow lot, and feel free to anytime to join us.
Absolutely. And, of course, on Facebook, it's ATL Falcoholics.
Right.
And then, obviously, on Twitter, ATL underscore Falcoholics.
And that's the same thing on Instagram as well. If people are just on Instagram, it's ATL underscore Falcoholics. Man, we look to see everybody out there and have a good time.
Absolutely. And, of course, I appreciate you joining us. And it's all warm weather games this year for the Falcons, so that's why it's the best time in the world to be a fan and travel to some of these games.
Exactly. And you know what? That's a good – you pointed that out. That's real. You're right.
Appreciate that, Jeremy. They either play in a dome or they play in the southeast pretty much the entire year.
Oh, man, you know you're absolutely right. Hey, that's another reason why we might make that deep run in the playoffs. See that, Jeremy? That's why turn the Falcons on, man. You bring those nuggets, man, them golden gems.
Yeah, and that's an original, too. I didn't even steal that from Colin or Dan or anybody. I think I was in between listening to the two of them when I come up with that.
Okay. Well, you got to pick something from everybody, man, and you create your own little thing, you know.
Absolutely. Mark, I appreciate you not only being the hospitality that every time I stop by you guys, even if it's 5 minutes or if it's 5 hours, it's always an amazing time, and appreciate you coming on the show.
I appreciate you having me, man, and we'll see you again soon, man.
Hey, definitely so. We can't wait 5 months again.
No, we can't wait 5 months. As a matter of fact, we got 90 days or whatever. Well, I'll tell you this. Stay tuned for training camp. It might be a tailgate set up. On the weekend during training camp. Just keep your eyes peeled.
I will definitely keep my eyes peeled and try to alert any of the fans so they can come meet you guys.
All right, Jeremy.
All right, we'll see you later, Mr. Cooper.
All right, Jeremy. Good night, man.
Of course, that was Mark Cooper from the ATL Falcoholics. You can listen to his tailgate report on WAOK 1380 AM here in the ATL on Sundays from 1 to 4 p.m. And that's pretty much going to do it for me this week. Appreciate Coach being able to join us for a little while. appreciate Reggie dropping by for a few minutes as well. And, of course, Mark Cooper from the ACL Falcoholic. I'm Jeremy the Impact York. Thanks for joining us in the zone. We'll see you guys in a couple weeks, actually.